We are Jack and Sandy. We are here on a historic day to remember. And if you're 45 years old today, you will be 45 years ago today, you would have been 15 years old back then.
Lou Bennett will join us in just a moment. He was on duty at the National Weather Service. In fact, he checked in. He got there about 3:15, which is right on time. Bill Hoverson wasn't on duty that day. He was my program director here at KFGO and at one time general manager as well. Hosted the mornings, hosted middays through the years. He was like an angel walking in the front door at around 3:55 that Saturday, and he joins us now on KFGO. Hello, my friend.
Good morning, Sandy.
I have to tell you that day changed the way I look at what we do, and it's not about that, but tell us, when you knew it was time for you to come into work that day, what do you remember?
I do remember that afternoon we were listening to you pushing platters past pretty pink ears, as they used to say in the old days. Playing your tunes on a Saturday afternoon. I was playing cards with my wife, Sharon, and the kids around the kitchen table about 6 or 8 blocks away from the studio. And as you gave the updates, I think, and you're going to have to fill me in here, my recollection is we were somewhat confused. I think there was only a traveler's advisory out. It was a beautiful blue sky February 4th day.
It was a beautiful blue sky February 4th day.
And it was Saturday afternoon, and people were out and about. It was a really a nice day. And listening to you, you began to talk about events occurring in the Northern Valley and that you were getting phone calls at the studio from people saying there's a wall of white. There was a traveler's advisory, is my recollection. Mm-hmm. That was about it. And as the afternoon wore on, you were in contact with the National Weather Service, and they said, well, it seems to be a significant event. It's actually coming down from Winnipeg. It's working its way south, and quite rapidly, I don't recall, but 60-mile-an-hour winds, something along
up
that line.
Up to 80-mile-an-hour winds.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, boy, you know, it's going to be a bad one. But Fargo wasn't really implicated or on your forecasts in your discussion, and I dealt a hand of cards to the kids. And I turned around, and I couldn't see a tree that was about 15 yards from our back door with this wall of white that suddenly hit Fargo-Moorhead. So I ran out in the garage, got in the rig, and
got here about 3:59.
By Braille, got here.
You did.
Just managed to get into the parking lot, and then it was on.
Lou Bennett is standing by, and he joins us now from South Carolina. He was on duty that day with the National Weather Service. In fact, I think reported in shortly after 3 o'clock. Lou Bennett, welcome back to KFGO. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Sandy. Glad to be talking with you. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Lou.
Let's talk about that weather phenomenon. What do you remember? I as Bill mentioned, there was a travel advisory day, and that travel advisory was in effect pretty much all afternoon, wasn't it?
Pretty much all afternoon. I started to work about 3:15. I turned off of Main Avenue onto the interstate and headed north. The wind switched when I got on the interstate headed north. One minute it was blowing out of the south, the next minute it was blowing hard out of the north. And as I got to 19th Avenue and turned off, the snow had increased tremendously. And it was had I not been that way before, I would have never found my way to the administrative building at the airport. When I got there, I drove up to the front of the building and literally got out of the right-hand side of my pickup and walked into the building. And, I mean, feeling my way down to the door. That's as hard as I've ever seen the combination of snow and blowing snow. I went on upstairs, and of course, everything, the phones were ringing off the hook. Andy had come in early, so we got briefed, took over, and the first thing we decided, we're going to issue a blizzard warning. So we issued the blizzard warning sometime in the neighborhood of 3:25, 3:30, somewhere in that frame. And I got that on the wire, and things just, and meanwhile, about before it hit, the 727 went out onto the runway, and the storm hit. They couldn't come back in. They couldn't take off. So there they sat for the better part of 4 or 5 hours.
So the problem really with that day was that we woke up to sunshine. We woke up to somewhat mild temperatures. We woke up to people wanting to get out. They'd been trapped all winter long. They were at the mall. They were shopping. And many of them were without winter gear because it was such a beautiful day.
Light jackets.
Worst case scenario for people that were outside, because it was a beautiful morning and a lot of people were out, as you said. And once the storm hit, anyone that was in a place of safety should have stayed there. A lot did not. And the result was terrible.
It was indeed, and we cannot forget that as we start remembering 30 years ago today, the blizzard of 1984, February 4th, is that there were many deaths. There were 22 in the region. There were 16 in the Red River Valley, and we all remember that like it was yesterday. We'll talk more about that with Bill Hoverson. Lou Bennett is joining us as well. He is formerly with the National Weather Service. He is joining us from his home in South Carolina on duty that day. And do you think that there was any sign from what we were seeing from the north, Lou, that would have indicated what was going to happen? Because remember, we'd only received, what, maybe 2 inches of snow that day?
Yep. Well, as we remember, this was an Alberta Clipper, which is a low-pressure system that forms generally in the Alberta regions of Canada and swings just barely into the U.S. and then back up into the eastern provinces of Canada. As a general rule, it produces light amounts of snow, little gusty wind, and blows on through. This being the exception to the rule, it dipped a little further south. The colder air aloft sunk down, mixed in with the surface winds. We got winds of 70, 80 miles an hour up in Winnipeg or in the Manitoba province. And as the storm developed, it was getting bigger and getting more and more developed. And then we began getting the reports out of the northern part of the valley that storm passed a given point, visibility went to nothing, and it was primarily blowing snow rather than falling snow.
Lou Bennett, formerly with the National Weather Service, on duty 30 years ago today when the Great White Wall hit the Red River Valley. Bill Hoverson was here and on duty at KFGO. Lou Bennett joins us. He is in South Carolina, but he was here at the National Weather Service 30 years ago today and barely got to the weather center by about 3:15, 3:30.
Lou, one thing I'd like to ask, hadn't the National Weather Service been alerting us to a potential dangerous storm for quite some time? And
yes, you and Mark Ewens was on the radio most of the afternoon, both the NOAA Weather Radio and with KFGO, and basically talking, even though there was a traveler's advisory, and back in those days, a traveler's advisory was probably an instrument that was used and no one abided by it. No one believed it. I mean, to me, if someone said there's a traveler's advisory, that would say, whoa, something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But not back then. It carried little or no weight. But as the storm evolved through the early afternoon, Mark continued to, every chance he could, write a statement. He put it out and got a little more emphatic about the weather turning sour. And when I walked in at 3:15, everything had turned around. We were talking blizzard. We looked out. As I came from outside, there was a raging blizzard going. So we coordinated with Bismarck, the forecast office, and we agreed we have a blizzard. Let's get a blizzard warning out. But up until that point, each successive bulletin that was put out, each time Mark had a chance to go on the radio, it was a little more strongly worded statements.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that was out and about, and the funny thing about it, in retrospect, the majority of people I talked to had not listened to the radio, nor had they listened to watch TV and basically didn't know what was happening.
They didn't know.
Beautiful morning. Weather was the least of their problems. And all of a sudden, when the storm hit, it was a problem for everybody.
Well, indeed. And I remember, and we tried to get a hold of Mark Ewens, but I think he's on vacation this week. So unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us. But as it built, I remember it building because I went on the air at noon that day. And then I worked until six. And I remember things building. I remember the travel advisory. Then I remember things intensifying. Then I remember getting the phone calls, as Bill Hoverson mentioned, of the winds up north at Grand Forks in excess of some 75 miles an hour. I had Mark Ewens on at least every hour after 2 p.m, for example. But you're right. People were going about business as if it were, a spring day. That's why so many people were caught shopping. Right, Bill?
Absolutely.
Oh, so that's why so many people were caught unprepared.
Unprepared all the way around. It radically changed once the wall was here. And that was the next step, basically, was suddenly we were into communication. We were attempting to get individuals in contact with one another, frantic mothers and relatives calling to say, I don't know where so-and-so is.
We will get to that in the second half hour here on 790 KFGO. Lou Bennett, thank you so much, our friend, for joining us today.
You're welcome.
It was a real pleasure. You have a very finely tuned memory of that day 30 years ago. It's hard to erase any of those memories, isn't it?
It certainly is. As a matter of fact, in talking about it here brings back some memories that I thought were firmly tucked away.
Yeah.
Well, if you would like to call back and share them a little later on, our noon hour will be open, Lou, and we would love to have you on to join us some more. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, Jack.
You know, it's very interesting listening to Bill Hoverson and Sandy Butweiler and Lou Bennett and others discussing the Great White Wall. Because even as a great Major League Baseball pitcher, when he's old, can sit back and recall every pitch against every major player, what the crowds were like and the weather was like the day of that game, they have a distinct, vivid memory. And that event 30 years ago today that many of you remember is one of those, and we're doing that today here on KFGO.
Bill Hoverson was the program director then of KFGO. We had minimal staff because people were either caught out of town or caught at home, so they were unable to actually get into the radio station. But Bill Hoverson took over the helm at 4 o'clock that day, stayed on the air until everyone was safe. And he is in our KFGO studios now. At what point do you remember, Bill, that we had decided that we were going to stay on full coverage, meaning we weren't going to power down, so to speak?
I think at the, I don't know what it was, it probably would have been 5:15 or something. We were scheduled to power down and go directional, actually, not power down. And we just said, there's no way with this thing raging that we can do that. We don't care if we're in trouble with the FCC or not. We're just going to stay on full power. We learned later that literally all of the other broadcast facilities in the community were down. I may be wrong on that, but my recollection is there was no other radio station active. The Armenia had been hit very hard, so the FMs, the AMs, they were all off the air. The television stations were off the air at that time. We were the sole communication hub, if you will, for the entire Red River Valley.
How did you see our role from that point?
We had had a dress rehearsal for it maybe 8 years before. There had been a major blizzard, a three-day rager that had come through. And during that time, somehow or another, we reached the point where there were so many announcements coming in. We said, let's just open up the phone lines. And so the model was there. We knew it could be done. But we made a decision, you and I, fairly early in that day, to go from writing down announcements as they're called in. We couldn't really handle the phone traffic. Every phone line was jammed. And we just said, let's just start going from phone call to phone call live on the air. We're going to take our chances. If somebody swears, that's the way it goes. Let's just get the word out. And then the voices began to come in. And as you were just discussing off air, The sounds in those voices were amazing. It was intense. Mothers, grandmothers, kids calling in saying, I don't know where so-and-so is at. Please call home. Please contact mom and dad, that type of thing.
And Bill Hoverson, who was behind the mic, was able to connect those people. He'd remember if someone was looking for their husband. He remembered when someone called earlier and said that that this woman's husband, Joe, was safe and, and at a home in Holly, for example. And to this day, it still gives me goosebumps. To give you an idea of what it looked like, 19th Avenue, the cars that were stalled on 19th Avenue were literally buried in the snow, Bill. And we will get to that horrible tragedy, the deaths, of course, of nearly two dozen people, but of the four on 19th Avenue, and we'll get to that in a moment. Talk about the technology and how you communicated with the hundreds, maybe thousands of people who were stranded.
That day, of course, there were no such things as cell phones. This is 1984. I mean, the technology that had just arrived was a bag phone, a radio, basically a telephone radio telephone. With people had, some of the farmers in our area had begun to experiment, and they had big whip antennas on the top of their rigs. And that was one of the first very riveting phone calls we got from people who literally had one of those phones in their car, and they were stranded. I mean, dug in south of town, I want to say in the Christine area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, that's when it really brought it home. I'm talking to somebody who is literally potentially about to die. And it was that cold. It was that windy. Wind chill factors were unbelievable. People were running out of gas. We were hearing about it. We began to hear, again, with people who had that communication ability, they would talk of caravans of cars that were along the side of the road, along I-29, as I recall, one group was out on near County Road 45, south of Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to get phone calls from the state plows, from the highway patrol and others saying, we're going to caravan out there. I believe the National Guard got involved at some
evac,
and they were using radios essentially to communicate. There was an awful lot of heroism going on that evening, and through the miracle of radio, we were hearing it. It, you know, one of the things that's always been said about radio, it's theater of the mind. And as the sun set and it got dark outside, along with the whiteout itself, it was very intense. People's imaginations were fired. People who were in their cars literally turning their radios on occasionally to hear us and to hear when is this thing going to end, and then had to turn their cars off in order to conserve their gas. And could not listen to the radio and the frantic sounds of their voices. It was a very riveting evening.
The frantic sounds of their voices. I have such a clear memory of mothers who didn't have formula to feed their kids, whose mm-hmm. heat went out. I mean,
diabetics and others who
medications.
Had
medications. Yeah. And just how unprepared, because people didn't have winter survival gear with them that day.
No. But then some, again, the heroics began to
happen.
There would be a communication from somebody saying, I'm out of, you know, insulin or whatever. Another voice would come on and say, I'll get to that person. I'm this close. I have insulin available.
Mm-hmm.
And it began, you know, there was a communication going on here that actually netted the community together, and people were saved as a result.
You were so rock solid, and I've often wondered how you were so calm and you saved so many lives, and you would literally talk people into staying awake, and you'd ask them about their families.
Yeah.
And you'd ask them about their kids, and you would literally keep them on the phone as if you were talking them down from a high building or something.
Well, again, that's radio. You know, you were taught, I was taught, mm-hmm. there's an audience of one. You're not talking to a mass audience. You're not talking to a stadium. You're talking to one individual. And that person that we happened to be talking to on the phone at that time needed to be told, don't panic. And I do want to mention the call from the gentleman from the University of Wyoming.
Bill Hoverson here at KFGO 30 years ago today. He walked in the front door at 4 o'clock, went on the air, and I don't think left the air. How many times did you? You probably had to go to the bathroom. I think people got donuts to us and pizzas. And
they did. And, you know, and people, we need to say that we weren't the only ones here after all was said and done.
Oh.
You know, that there were other staff that, who made it in. There were other staff actively involved who were working phones from their home. Paul Newberg, mm-hmm. as I recall, I might be wrong on this, but was stranded in West Fargo, but was working the phones with the sheriff's department and other people and calling in reports. And
The people who weren't here were stranded.
Yeah.
Dave Lee, I believe, was stranded coming back from Minneapolis. Tom Wynn was stranded somewhere.
And like fire horses wanted to be here, but couldn't get here until the next day when the sun broke. But as I recall, and you're going to have to correct me, we had Don Hall, the controversial Don Hall,
right,
was here, and I mean, like a rock, as always, was here throughout. And Round Boy, Don Formanek, Don Roberts was here. Yourself, Sue Ellison. Was able to get in. And these people literally risked their lives after a certain time of the day to get down here. I mean, it wasn't like they came in with police escorts.
We did take, I remember Sue Ellison and I decided we were going to just get maybe an hour of sleep because we all needed to refresh ourselves because, like you said, those were the handful of people who were here. So, and we woke up around 4:30, 5 o'clock, and we woke up to the news and it was Paul Juergens, who then a young newsman, who called and was on KFGO and gave you the news of what was found on 19th Avenue.
All night we had been hearing of a missing group of young people. They were like 12 years old, Boy Scouts, and their dad, and had been out at West Acres and presumably were trapped someplace. And we got word, or Paul Juergens finally heard, after we knew there were cars stranded along 19th Avenue North. They got to a particular car, and unfortunately, that group had asphyxiated. And it was a group of four, I believe.
It was a father, it was his son, and then his friends. And, you know, evac and emergency crews had been looking in vehicles, but literally 19th Avenue North was, cars were buried in the snow. And what happened with this family was the snow built up in the back, and the exhaust, they died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And I don't, it's difficult to talk about that today without,
you look back,
without getting emotional, isn't
you
it?
You look back. I mean,
it was a failure. We thought, oh my gosh.
It was.
We failed.
Later, the station won a Peabody Award for the coverage, but you look back on it and you say, but, you know, forget it. I mean, we missed that one. We couldn't do it. You know, you do have a sense that you let people down, and it still haunts to this day. You have a moment to talk about the guy from Wyoming?
Let me mention something else first, Bill.
Yep.
That for people who are not around 30 years ago, the reason there are gates on the freeway, like at 19th Avenue, et cetera, it was all precipitated by that incident 30 years ago today, that they decided they had to be able to come up with a way to physically block people from going into certain roadways. And so that's why we have that now.
Yeah, 19th Avenue has been
it was trouble
massively.
Then, and it's trouble now.
Still is, but even with the improvements and the gates and so on, it's a quote, death trap. That's one of those things that can happen.
Share the story about the farmer.
Well, one of the calls we got, I recall it was shortly after midnight that night. We had been fielding hundreds of calls, and many of them from these stranded people who were in their vehicles, potentially about to freeze to death. And we got a call from a professor from the University of Wyoming who had been visiting at NDSU for something, but he was a survival expert. And he began to talk about, this is what you do. You know, and it was tough love, baby. I mean, it came right down to, if you've got to go number two, you do it on the seat of your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't worry about the brand new carpet. Carpet can be ripped out, and it can be... your car can be restored, but don't leave that vehicle. That type of thing. And he talked about body heat. He talked about preserving, about get together naked. and the importance of doing that. Don't get rid of your layers of clothing. Get flesh
I tried to
flesh.
Block that out.
I know it was, you know, but
it was true. I remember him.
And from that, you know, the balance of the evening was spent with those kinds of very direct survival tips. And there were people who fed back to us later that had that call not been made, they wouldn't have known to do X, Y, Z, and it literally saved their life. That phone call was very memorable.
It was indeed. It's 11:57. We are remembering 30 years ago today. Did you have a moment where you just let it all go when you got off the air that day?
Maybe the next day.
Maybe the next day.
Sunday after, you know, when we after it was done, when we were on our way, you and I probably were on our way home. I don't know.
About
we
the same
got a ride
time. About
at the same
noon.
Time.
Yep.
And you know, that's when it kind of hit. But it was a lot of coffee and a lot of. But there was adrenaline going on.
We smoked then, Bill.
Yeah, we did.
We smoked.
How many hours were you on the air from 4 o'clock until?
Well, we got off. I want to say we saw our first relief in here for board work about 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And we hung around a bit, but then we were out of here by noon.
You changed my life and changed my career in more ways than I can ever thank you.
You too.
If I'm anything, it's because of you and your role in my career. Thank you. I'm
going to
cry. I may weep.
And me.
Yeah.
And you too.
Had and Bill.
We can't thank you enough.
Had Bill Hoverson Nutt.
These are proud call letters.
Well,
tell you that.
Thank you for sharing with us 30 years ago today on KFGO.